Folks, one thing each night has been evident to me before I've come up here to speak, and that is that the song leader has done his work thinking about my topics and matching it with songs. I don't know when I've ever seen that happen as well in a gospel meeting, and I appreciate it. Tonight I am in the book that we call the Book of James, and if you would turn your Bibles to James chapter 1, I'll be ready to start with the text itself in a few moments. But let me begin with a question. How many of you are old enough, and you'll just have to fess up, how many of you are old enough to remember Burma Shave signs along the road? Oh, I see plenty of hands. And for the rest of you, Burma Shave was a shaving cream which was put on the market back in the 1930s and was a big seller even into the 1940s and for many into the 1950s, the early part of the 50s. And they began to advertise by putting a series of signs along sides of highways. I was initiated to them because my grandparents lived in Murray County, Tennessee, which has as its county seat Columbia, Tennessee, some 40 miles south of Nashville. And when we would go down to see my father's parents in Columbia or my mother's parents down in a rural area 12 miles north of Columbia, we would, on the way home, watch for Burma Shave signs, because that's the way Daddy kept my brother and me entertained. And when we were saying, "Daddy, how much longer is it going to be before we get home?" And those signs were fun to read because they were set at intervals. Those of you who know about them know this already, but I'm just trying to tell the younger ones what it was like. So that you read a few words of a bit of verse, and then came the next words some piece down the road. A little more down the road, you got the next ones, and finally you got the last words of the sentence that advertised Burma Shave shaving cream. It might have been something like this. In this world, first sign, next sign, of toil and sin, third sign, your head grows bald, fourth sign, but not your chin. And then they would have a sign that said, "Use Burma Shave." Little verses like that, as they went along, helped us pass the time on the highways when we were young. I want to do that in a similar way tonight. Some Burma Shave preaching, I guess I'll call it, as I go into James chapter 1. And here's how it's going to be like those verses. I'm going to take bits of verses as we go along in the first few verses of James 1. And as we look at one verse, we'll get some thought. And the next verse, we'll add a thought. And the next verse, we'll add a thought. And as we keep going down, the thoughts will build. It is a way of letting the Bible expose itself. I believe we learn more through expository preaching and teaching, where the page is put there and bit by bit by bit we see the parts and then we're able to put them together. And I want you to do that with me tonight as we begin in James chapter 1, where James, a bondservant of God, he calls himself, writes to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad. Now, these are Israelites who've become Christians, and some who perhaps haven't, who might come into contact with James' message about the Christ. But as he writes to these Jewish people about Jesus, he begins in verse 2 with the first part of four ideas that he goes to in verses 2, 3, 4, and 5. He begins by saying, "Count it." That's the old King James translation. "Consider it," we would say today in later translations. "Count it all joy," as you add things up, in other words, like you're counting, as you consider something. "Count it all joy, my brethren," he says, "when you fall into various trials." Now I want you to notice something. He didn't say, "If you fall into various trials." He didn't say that, did he? He said, "You count it all joy when you fall into these various trials. That means James is confident that it is going to happen. No matter how much we want to go up, we will find ourselves at times being pulled down. How many of you remember the Candid Camera program on television some decades ago, where they would stage artificial situations and have a camera ready to get somebody? They might, for instance, have a car driven down a hill into a service station. And back then, somebody always came out to wash your windshield and then to say, "Can I check your oil?" And then he would say, "How many gallons of gasoline do you want?" It was full service. Well, they had this car where they had taken the motor out from under the hood and put it back in the trunk. Now, that took a lot of work, but they got it done. And a man drove his car into the service station, and the man came out walking like this, ready to give them service. And he said, "Can I check your oil?" "Yes." And so he opened the hood and he looked and got big eyed. And he went around to the man in the car behind the steering wheel and he said, "Sir," says, "you've lost your motor." He said, "What do you mean?" "Your engine's not there," he said. And of course, we were seeing the film of all of that and we were getting a good laugh of how they had fooled this particular man. Well, one Candid Camera program, they reversed the signs on the escalators in a department store so that for the escalator that went up, there was a down sign, and for the escalator that went down, there was an up sign. So that as people were coming in and wanting to go to the second floor, they left the one that really would have taken them there because the sign up was over here. And then they were filming, the program directors were filming, as people got on the escalator, which was going down, and tried to beat it to get up to the second floor. When I saw that one, I thought, that's what happens a lot of times to those of us who are Christians. We're trying to go up on a world which is a go-down escalator. And James says, "Count it all joy when you fall into various trials." The first of four verbs I want you to see is the first word there in verse 2. The word "consider" in some translations. The word "count" if you still have the old King James Version. It means as you add things up in your mind, you consider it all joy when you fall into different trials. Now, Charlie Brown, who has been on television, but who certainly was in the funny papers, as we used to call them. You remember Lucy and Charlie Brown? I guess they're still around. Well, there was a night when Charlie Brown was very unhappy. And Lucy was telling him, "Charlie Brown, brighten up." She said, "Into every life there is some sunshine, but there also has to come some rain. In every life there are the high hills of happiness, but there are also some deep valleys of sorrows. In every life there is the bright sunshine of day, but there is also the darkness of night." Charlie Brown looked at her and he said, "It's raining in my valley tonight." And that's what happened to a lot of the Christians back then, and it's what happens even to Christians today. And James doesn't say, "Count it all joy if you encounter various trials." He says, "Count it all joy when you fall into these." That's our first verb, consider, count. Consider it joy when you fall into these things. Now look at the second of these four verses, which is verse 3. The series starts in verse 2 after his greeting in verse 1. In verse 3, James tells us why we can consider it as a joyful thing when we fall into various trials. He says, knowing. knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Now, I told you there were four verbs, and somebody says, knowing isn't a verb. It's a verb that is turned into what they call in language participle, a participle. Now, I didn't know a participle from a popsicle when I was in school. But I learned later on that a participle is, in a sense, a verb used as an adjective. Count it or consider it all joy when you fall into these things, because you are knowing something. Now, that's something true of you. You're a knowing person. But what are you knowing here in this participle? You are knowing that the testing of your faith actually produces an endurance, he says. The word endurance there is an interesting word if you look back at the original language that James wrote in. He took a word, mone, Greek word, that meant to stay under something, to live somewhere. And he put in front of that word a prefix. Boys and girls, a prefix is a front porch on a word. And it's hupo. Hupo means under. So you've got a word right here in the Greek language which literally means you're remaining under something. And that's the word that is translated right here, endurance. Count it all joy when you fall into these divers or different trials, knowing that the trying of your faith, it brings about a remaining under. It brings about an endurance. You can stand up under something is the idea. You get stronger at it. So that's your second verb James uses. The first one in verse 2, consider. The next in verse 3, knowing. Now look at verse 4. Verse 4 begins with the word let. That's our third of four verbs in four straight verses. You count it all joy when you fall into these different trials, knowing that the trying of your faith will bring about a steadfastness. But he says you've got to let that thing happen. And so he says in what we call verse 4, and let endurance have its perfect, that is, its complete work. Let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Now, perfect means to us no faults, no sins. And we say there are not any perfect people. James knows something that we don't know as he writes. The word rendered perfect right here is a word that doesn't refer to sinlessness, but to a form of completeness which is maturity. James is saying we grow up spiritually when we grow up fighting trials. Lifting barbells makes people stronger. Lifting weights makes people stronger. James says, count it all joy when you fall into these different trials, knowing that the trying of your faith is going to bring about a steadfastness. And you've got to let that endurance have its complete result, James says, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. I don't know what commercial it was that used to be on television. I don't know what they were selling. But there was a little episode in which something would happen and somebody would slap somebody and he would say, thanks, I needed that. And that's what James is saying, you think, as you encounter various trials. You say, Lord, thanks, I needed that. It made me stronger by enduring those trials. I thank you. And so verse 4 has a key verb in it. Just as verse 2 is, we have to count it. We have to add it up. We have to consider. And verse 3 is, because of what we're knowing, knowing that the trying of our faith brings about a steadfastness. In verse 4, you've got to let that happen. Let this endurance have its perfect result. Now look at verse 5. Our fourth verb that I want to center on is the word ask, which comes at the middle part of verse 5. He says, when you're doing all of this, but if any of you lacks wisdom, that is, if you say, I just don't know how I'm going to get through this thing. If you lack wisdom, knowing how you can count it joy when you fall into these trials, knowing that the trying of your faith is going to bring about an endurance, and you know that you've got to keep on letting it have its complete result. James says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you don't know how you're going to get through all this. Let him, here comes the verb, ask. Let him ask of God. Why? Because he goes on to tell us God is the one who gives to all men generously, that is to all mankind, not just to males, who gives to all mankind generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But you've got to ask. When I was up in New Jersey years ago, Nancy and I had gone up there to work with a mission church. Agreed to work with them for several years while they would let me also go to graduate school in Philadelphia. While we were up there, I learned about a parade that came every year near the first of the year in Philadelphia. They call that parade still, as they did then, the Mummer's Day Parade. Now, I don't know what the word mummer meant, but it was a Mummer's Day Parade. And it was a parade which featured a bunch of groups competing with one another. These were clubs that had been started decades ago for this very parade. All year long, each club would practice on its music that it was going to play in the parade when it marched past the judges' stand. It was made up of members that knew how to play musical instruments in a band. And they worked all year long on their music. It became their religion. It became their church. And the wives, it was the same way with them. They worked all year long on the outlandish costumes that their men would wear for their club as they marched in the Mummer's Day Parade and played the song in front of the judges' stand. Well, during the time that we lived up there, I heard a story about two fellows who marched in the Mummer's Day Parade. I don't know if it was real or if it was made up, but I want to share it with you because it'll help me make a point. We'll call one, let's call one Pete, let's call one Joe, all right? Pete and Joe were in one of these groups, had their costumes on, had their instruments ready to march. And Pete turned to Joe and said, Joe, I bet you I can walk further in this parade with beans in my shoes than you can walk with beans in your shoes. And the others said, well, you're on. And so each agreed to put 5 beans in each shoe. And they did. And then the parade began and their turn came and they began to strut down the street and were playing their instruments. Well, Joe got about 2 blocks and he pulled over on the side and he took his shoes off and he emptied out those old hard beans and he put his shoes back on and he tied them and he ran until he caught up with his bunch and he got beside Pete and he frowned at him and they kept marching along. End of the parade, Joe went up to Pete and he looked him in the face and he said, Pete, you cheated. Joe said, Pete said, what do you mean? Joe said, Pete, you cheated. You didn't put beans in your shoes like I did. Pete said, I did. Well, Joe said, you didn't put 5 beans in each shoe. Pete said, I did. Well, Joe said, if you put 5 beans in your shoes and I put 5 beans in each of my shoes, how is it you could walk the 5 miles of the route and I could only go 2 blocks? Pete says, I cooked mine first. Now, I told that in order to make this point. James is saying, you're going to have the beans in your shoes in life, figuratively speaking. You're going to have the trials. He's already been saying that. But he says you can cook them first. If any of you lacks wisdom, that is how you can deal with these things, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally, generously, one translation says, without reproach, and it'll be given to him. Now, we've looked here at four straight verses which tell Christians how they can deal with trials. You count it all joy when you fall into these divers trials, different trials, because you're knowing that the trying of your faith can bring about a steadfastness. And you must learn to let steadfastness have its complete result. But if any of you lack wisdom as to how to get through this, ask of God and He'll help you. That makes sense, doesn't it? Now I want to move from one word that we sang about tonight to a second word we sang about. You led us in the old song, tempted and tried. We're oft made to wonder. And I've just looked right here at the second of those two words, the word tried, when you go through trials. But sometimes our trials become temptations to us, don't they? We kind of get mad at God. And so James, knowing this, not only has these four verses, verse 2, 3, 4, and 5, but as I go further down the page, in fact, I'm going to have to turn it in my Bible. You may have to do the same thing. I come to verse 13, where he moves from the trials to the temptations. Move with me and with James. James says in verse 13, let no man say. Now, let me stop again. I stopped once and said this. Ladies, you're included here. There were two words for man in the Greek language. One of those Greek words meant the male gender. The other meant man in the sense of mankind, human beings. Both times, earlier in those four verses we looked at and now right here, James uses the word for the human being, not just for the males in the audience. So when James says, let no man say, as he does in some translations. This translation renders it, let no one say when he is tempted. I'm being tempted by God. Now wait just a minute. Why would anybody say I'm being tempted by God to do wrong? Because we say God put us into those trials. He let them happen. And if he let those trials happen to me, then he was tempting me to get mad and to do wrong. James says, don't think that way. Let no one say when he, meaning he or she, because he's right here talking to every Christian. Let no one say when he's tempted, I'm being tempted by God. And the word for by there is the Greek word apo, which meant directly, not hupo, which means indirectly. Don't ever say God is directly tempting you, trying to get you to do wrong because he put you in those situations we studied about up in verses 2, 3, 4, and 5. James says, don't say that. Why? Why not? James answers, for. When you're reading your Bible and you see for at the start of a sentence or at the start of a clause, that's a signpost word, that just like a sign along a road that lets you know where you're going, what road you're about to turn on. Here's a signpost word, and it is a word that says, here comes the reason for what I've just said. Greek preposition gar. Here comes the reason. So he says, don't say if you're tempted. You've gone through all these trials and they're tempting you. You're just getting mad at God. You're going to do something wrong because of all of this. James says, when you're tempted, don't say, I'm being tempted by God. Mm-mm. Because God cannot be tempted by evil. And he himself does not tempt anyone. Well, somebody might be thinking, then where does the temptation come from? Well, you say, the devil. Yeah, but it's a little further than that. Look at verse 4. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. The King James translation some of you have says, by his own desires. Don't blame God if your trial makes you feel tempted. Blame yourself. Each one's tempted when he's drawn away by his own lust, by his own desires. And I want to close the lesson with an illustration which is very personal. A time that I was tempted to do something and I did it, not because I had to, but because of my own desires. I think I was a sophomore in high school. And I had the desire one Saturday morning in the spring to go fishing down in the Little Harpeth River, which was south of where we lived, at the south end of Nashville. And I got up early in the morning, and Daddy had already said I could use his old 47 Plymouth, and I put the keys where I would find them, and I had my fly rod on the back seat, and I was ready to go, and I slipped out quietly so I wouldn't wake my parents. And I started south on Granny White Pike toward the Little Harpeth River. Well, on the way to the Little Harpeth River, I knew there was a road that turned on to a very beautiful lake where one could not go fishing. It's called Radnor Lake. It lies south of Nashville, up in the hills, and it was built in order to supply the railroad yards of Nashville with water for steam locomotives way back in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. And the water was no longer needed for steam locomotives because by the time I was a sophomore in high school, the steam locomotive was going out and the diesel had come in. But the lake was still there, and it was being leased by a group of physicians in Nashville, medical doctors, who liked fish. And there were signs all along the little road that ran right beside the lake saying, private, no fishing. And there was even a little house over on the side of the lake where a caretaker lived, and he could watch to make sure no fishing. But it was early in the morning, and I thought it won't hurt just to ride past that lake and see how pretty it is this morning. So I made a left turn, and I began to drive toward Radnor Lake, and it was only about a quarter of a mile to where I could see the water, and I pulled up in front of the lake because the road is right beside the water. You can almost lean out of your car window and see your face reflected in the water. And I stopped. I just happened to stop at a place where you could not see the caretaker's house. I stopped and I got out. And I stopped where a big tree hung out over the water. More trunk was going sideways than was going up into the air. And in the shadow of all of that, down there in that water, I saw two of the biggest bluegill brim I have ever seen in my life. I've seen pictures like them in magazines called Sports Field and other hunting and fishing magazines, Outdoor Life. And I knew those were big boogers down there for that brand of fish. And I had my fly rod on the back seat. I got to thinking. Each man is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires. I began to think, it won't hurt just to see if that fish down there or that one right there will rise to a fly. I got my fly rod off the back seat, just happened to be all rigged up. I put that fly out there on the water right below the shadow of that tree, right below that tree trunk, there in its shadow, and the water exploded. I pulled in the biggest bluegill brim I have ever seen. I'm not exaggerating when I say he was like this. And I thought, my daddy will never believe I caught an old brim this big. And then I thought, if I throw him back, he'll probably die anyway. So I put my fly rod back in the car and I backed up and I turned around and I headed home. Got my daddy out of bed about 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning. At least got him kind of leaning up off the pillow. And I brought that fish up and I held it in front of his face there. I said, "Daddy, look what I caught." He said, "Ooh, son," said, "that's a big bream." Said, "Where in the world did you catch him?" I said, "Radnor Lake." And I thought he'd say, "Wow, that's the biggest bream I've ever seen." He said one thing. He looked at me from the bed and he said, "Son, why did you fish where the sign says no fishing?" Now, what could I say? Could I say, well, it was because the fish was there? No. It was because I had my fly rod on the back seat? No. It was because no one was looking? No. What did I have to say? I knew the answer in my heart. I did it because I wanted to. And that's what James says, means when he says, let no man say when he's tempted, "I'm being tempted by God." Oh no. James says, because each man's tempted when he is drawn away and enticed. Those are fishing words, incidentally. You entice that fish and then you draw him in. Each man gets caught when he's drawn away and enticed by his own desires. And desire, when it has conceived, it's like bringing a child forth. Here's a child, a woman conceives and begins to bear a child. He says, desire, when it has conceived, ultimately, what does it do? It brings forth the sin. And sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. We've looked at a section in the book of James which talks about what a lot of folks have called for, I suppose, centuries, our besetting sins. From the old King James translation expression, the sin which doth so easily beset us. But we all have them. And we know why. It's because we wanted to do it. That's what James says. I hope this will help you and me live a better life in the weeks and months and years to come. But there may be some person, boy, girl, man or woman here tonight, who's having a great deal of trouble dealing with besetting sins, and it may be because you've never become a Christian. You've never asked the Lord to help you fight a temptation. We looked at verses before we got to these last verses. We looked at verses which say anything you encounter, you can whip with the Lord's help. I believe those verses, just as I believe the ones that tell why we do what we shouldn't do. And they all go together. You want to quit doing something that you shouldn't do, you get the help from the Lord Jesus by joining up in fellowship with Him. Will you come as we stand up and sing?